are.
Hello and welcome to the Hooniverse podcast. I'm your host. I was going to think of a funny name, but I ain't got shit. So I'm just Jeff tonight. And this is Ron. What's up, Ron?
What's up?
How's everybody doing?
Oh, see, that sounds so good.
As if anybody could actually answer me in real time. How are you doing, Jeff?
Good. I'm good. I have a nice full glass of wine in front of me. How about yourself?
What you sipping on?
Just some red wine. Just, I don't even know what it is. My wife ran out and grabbed some shit.
Red blend. Mm-hmm. I am.
Just some delicious grape.
I have a tall glass of bullet bourbon.
That is a tall glass.
Yeah, it is. It's probably a quarter water, but I just.
Okay.
Because of the new setup, it's really not convenient. It's not conducive to getting up and walking around. So I'm here for the long haul. This better last me an hour.
Nice. All right, sweet. Good to know.
What happened to you? I don't see you.
You can't see me?
I cannot see you. Like, it's not like you're frozen, but it's just, it's like your camera's off. It just, there's a J.
Because I can see both of us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, give me one second. I don't want to do that. Where did the side thing go?
When you went out to check episode count, I think is when we lost you.
Yeah, I stepped out for a second, but I'm here. Let me do this. I'm gonna stop it and restart it.
Okay.
Just because I don't know why it's doing that. Because I mean, I am here. Hold on one sec.
Go for it.
Okay, now I'm definitely off. And
here's my guy.
Okay, I didn't have to. All right,
there we go. Welcome back to the show. Really big show.
I'm good. I want to dive into this and kick it off with a topic you're going to know more about than I will, but I don't know how much you'll know because these things are usually, you know, they keep these things under wraps.
I love
you are
surprises.
On that team. Electricana.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Walk us through it. Tell us all the deets that you know.
Walk you through it. Well, I mean, I did interview Mr. Ken Block for another podcast.
Yep.
The Hoonigan podcast, but that was a live show, which is kind of cool, and Ken was very gracious to join us and answer some of the questions that I had, even though I think he was annoyed. Apparently, nobody gives a fuck about vehicle speed when it comes to Gymkhana videos, so...
gives a fuck about what?
Vehicle speed, ground speed, as opposed to wheel speed, so if you ever have the opportunity, don't ask Ken about that.
Yeah, they don't want to...
That's my only advice. But
most race car drivers, unless it's like some endurance racing stuff, if they have to know it for corners, then like some off-road guys will tout it. But most of the time they're like, I care about engine revs.
Right.
I don't care about engine speed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that was kind of the response that I received, but, anyway, that's a different podcast. Yeah, so, I mean, what I know about it and what I knew about it before was it was filmed in Vegas at night. It was hotter than a motherfucker. It was, you know, impossible. Like, they basically accomplished the impossible in shutting down parts of the strip. You know, huge intersections, certain casinos, certain casino entries and driveways and stuff. And my takeaway from it as a fan and not, I mean, I got access to the film the night before it released. So it's not like, you know, I've been sitting on it for months and months, but, my reaction as a fan is I didn't miss the noise that much because the car actually makes some crazy, like, I hate to say it, but Tron like noises, like, you know,
yeah,
there's a lot of gear whine. You know, it sounds mechanical and it's not manufactured sound. So, you know, even, you know, to somebody like myself that loves the sound of a short stroke, high revving V8, like there's nothing better in the world to me. Like this, I set my expectations kind of low as far as the sound of the vehicle, but was pleasantly surprised. So, you know, I see a bunch of people commenting shit like, oh, I've never watched stupid fucking EV do donuts like watching an RC car. Well, fucking RC cars do some amazing things too that you could never do. And you're fucking F-150 with a fucking cherry bomb muffler, asshole.
Right.
So anyway, like the video, just like the violence, like the speed and the violence of some of the stunts was what really stuck with me and was super impressive. Like, you know, like 270 degree spins at like, you know, 80 miles an hour, 80, 90 miles an hour. Like, you know, it was really impressive. And it was, you know, at times like, fuck, like that's uncontrollable. Like throwing a car into a backward slide at 80 plus miles an hour and then having any sort of control over it, but control with, two electric motors and four powered wheels with no center diff connecting them. And like just understanding how the vehicle dynamics change and how the car puts the power down to the pavement, you know, unlike anything that Ken's ever driven, was what was most impressive to me, because they totally mastered it. And like, you know, people complain about, oh, they tried that trick like three times. I see the marks on the ground, right?
They've been saying that since Gymkhana.
Oh, okay. Won. But like when you see the tracks, like especially the crazy, like backwards 180, there's like two or maybe two other sets of tracks, but they're all within like 3 to 4 feet of each other, which to me is not disappointing. It's fucking impressive that he nailed it every single time and like was so consistent with it with a vehicle medium that's basically brand new to him. And, you know, it's, you know, overall, like my takeaways are very impressive driving, definitely mastering a unique vehicle that like the likes of which did not exist before Audi spent $10, $12, $15 million to build this for him specifically for Gymkhana. Like that's what's craziest to me is that, you know, I'm sure when Scott and Ken started out, they didn't ever anticipate that a major manufacturer would build them a bespoke Gymkhana car.
Right.
Just for them to rip for these videos. So, you know, our buddy Johnny has the Inevitable Podcast. And I always say, like, that's the perfect name for a podcast about EVs, because that's what EVs are. This is inevitable. Like, you don't want to be the last one. You know, you want to be the pioneer to kind of introduce this technology to, you know, motorsports or hooning world, stunt driving world, as opposed to be, you know, the last. So, I mean, I think it was really bold of them of Audi to build the car, Hoonigan to take on the project, and everybody else involved to make it happen. And I think it was a success. Does it deliver all the violence and the sound and the fury as, you know, Gymkhana 7 or Gymkhana 5? Probably not, but there's definitely a learning curve here. And I think they're ahead of the curve. Like it's actually really impressive. So
that,
I have no involvement in that shit. So it's not like, you know, I'm tooting my own horn in any way. Like those guys.
No.
It's like a separate team. I know. But I just, you know, I just wanted to say that, you know, it was, that is my commentary as a fan, not as a Wheel Pros employee.
Right. I thought it was, visually there were some very beautiful shots. Some of the still photography that came out of it is amazing. Yeah. Just some gorgeous stuff. The stunts were absolutely incredible. To be able to control that car like that. And you mentioned the no center diff. Like, it doesn't need it. You know, that's why you have the one motor on the front axle, the one motor on the rear. You're not waiting for drive shafts to transfer power.
Right.
You know, it's such an amazing thing that, like, it's going to be different at first, but then once Ken realizes what he can do with the car, he's like, oh shit. Right. Like I can just sit there and loop it. I can throw it in as hard as I want and immediately get back on the power and come back out. It must've been just such an insane torture test for those tires. Cause I know they were mentioning wheel speed was like the highest they've ever had for some stuff.
And they went through something like three times as many tires as they normally do in a Gymkhana film. Because the thing is heavy as fuck. Like I think they said it's like 4,500 or 5,000 pounds. And it's kind of an undersized tire. I think it's like a 265 or 275 versus like I think they normally run like 305s on the Hoonicorn.
That's crazy. Right.
So it's like, you're asking a lot of those tires, and it's a special compound developed for Ken by Toyo, which I think is crazy also, but like, you know, it's insane all around the effort that goes into it. Like, it's not just some fucking, we just fucking threw together this car, you know, thought we'd.
No,
there's a guy with a camera over here. Like, you know, there's a lot of planning. There's a lot of logistics. There's a lot of direction and just, you know, like setting up shots and deciding what will look cool and be visually stunning. Like, you know, kudos to that team. Like they are, you know, they're the best at what they do. And as much as people want to, you know, talk shit and boycott an EV Gymkhana, like you're only punishing yourself. Like there's,
It's fucking cool. The crazy thing is with the internet is it's always the ones who speak up, the ones who are the loudest are both the happiest and the angriest. Everyone else is like, oh, mm-hmm. it's cool. And so like 90% of the people who watch that will go, oh, that's cool. Right. 5% go, that was fucking amazing. I literally came in my right. pants, literally. And then the other 5% will be like, I fucking hate Hoonigan and I will bomb yeah. the building. So like it's so whatever, you know, it's like the whatever.
I don't read the comments. I don't read the comments on anything that I fucking ever a part of. But I know Scotto yeah. does, and I feel like that's like the most masochistic thing. I'm just like, dude. Like I know you build content for an audience, right? But like the right. people that come in and watch your videos or just come to comment and just bash, like that's not your audience. And you know, you can't let that shit get to you. And I know that it's easy for me to say, like, I don't make media for a living, but I just, you know, I feel bad for, you know, anybody that's under a spotlight like that and doing anything that's considered remotely controversial. And it shouldn't be controversial to make a video with
no, not even a little
EV
bit.
In 2022. But, right. Yeah, it's just like you said, the people that are most vocal are not necessarily the most informed. They're not necessarily a target audience. They're not necessarily, you know, equipped or intelligent enough to really even have an opinion on that shit.
You just enjoy it, man. It's a cool piece of footage of a car doing amazing things driven by a madman. I mean, he did donuts inside the lobby of the hotel. That was the raddest yeah. shit. Was Vin in that scene?
Yes.
Was yeah, that his yeah. scene? Okay. Because I saw the picture of him dressed as Depp from
Fear and Loathing. Fear and yeah. Loathing. Best cameo in history, in my opinion.
But no no Sasquatch in this one, which was interesting. Or Scotto usually dresses up as like something
right and
big.
Does the Segway thing. I don't even think they had yeah. the Segway in this one. Yeah, they didn't.
I didn't see it. I still
that's
think
a missed opportunity.
Of all the Gymkhanas, I go back and forth on them. Sometimes I say LA, but I think San Francisco
right.
might be
five,
the best.
Five
one.
And seven are typically the standouts for most people.
Yeah. And of the Gymkhana cars, I want to say the truck is my favorite just because it's so
sounds
awesome.
Like ass.
But it's the Mustang. The Mustang's yeah. the best.
Unicorn just fucking dominates that thing. Yeah.
Especially when they did Unicorn versus the world and show you how fast yeah. it is. And I was texting Scotto about that. I was like, yo, what's the gearing on that car? Like, nobody's talking about the gearing mm-hmm. on the car. It must be so insane.
Like, they go through gears so fucking quick.
Yeah, but he said it's during the taping, he said it was set up in like its higher speed gearing. I'm like, that's right. insane. That is yeah. bananas. I thought it was cool. I sent Scotto a text. I've sent him like a text after everyone since, I don't know, five or yeah. seven. I don't remember. But I didn't hear back on this one. So maybe he's dealing with the commenters.
It was Tuesday was definitely a crazy day for him. And I hope he's not reading the comments. But I think they had like a little post, like a little rap party at the Pike on Tuesday. And I said nice. I was going to go and, you know, I'll take any excuse to go to the Pike. But I passed out on the couch and I'm just like, Mr. Dad, like, Scotto like has a almost 3-year-old and like he doesn't go out, like, you know, he's like either working or home with the family, right? And like I live right down the street right. from the Pike, and I'm there. I was just there last Friday.
You're like, I'm tired.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
tired.
Like the irony that the one time this dude goes out and he's just like, we're getting drunk tonight. Like I was like, hell yeah, and then fell asleep at like 9 o'clock.
So, awesome.
Sorry,
nice,
sorry, Brian.
Nice. That's funny shit. Sorry, Brian. That's pretty funny shit. Next topic I want to cover is recently, you and I got a chance to experience. That's correct,
it's
right?
Correct.
We went to a place called CXC Simulations, and they make some
holy
of the best
fuck.
Simulators yeah. you can buy. And we're not talking like your Logitech and like some nice screens. Their base package is about $64,000.
God damn, I was wondering. I felt like the floor was $100,000, like based on the experience.
That floor one we drove.
No, I'm just saying. I'm just
was
saying
about $110,000.
Like the minimum point of entry, I felt like was $100,000. Like that's
no, like
how impressed I was. So I didn't ask. I didn't want to ask. I was embarrassed because I knew you'd already gotten the details or whatever. But that doesn't surprise me at all.
I was there to write a story.
$64,000 feels like a bargain. I hate to say that.
So. It's a like a full motion setup. That entry level one of theirs is, you know, fully integrated computer speakers, and it's a single monitor setup. From there, you know, you add VR, you add triple monitors, you can add triple 55s, or you can add triple 77s.
You know what it is?
we drove one with the triple 77s, and we got to try the VR. It has these seatbelt tensioners that, so like when you're jumping a Pro 2 truck, it feels like you're airborne for so a second. Sick. It was really impressive. We didn't even dive into like, because you can also just click a button and be into a flight sim. And that's the other crazy thing that he was telling me about is they made it so brainless for their end consumer, where instead of like going in, clicking through the menus, exiting a program, doing all this stuff, because it's still a computer, you know, it's not like an Xbox. But they built into the dash of the
console
the sim, it's all push button. So like, you're like, I want to do iRacing. You just push a button and they code the computer to be like, all right, close this program, open this other program. All right, I want to switch to flight sim. You just push the button. You don't grab the mouse. You don't do this. There is a handheld mouse you can do when you're in iRacing to change tracks and select cars and all that shit. But they were very nice people and the sim was awesome.
Totally. I just said $64,000 and like, I want you to expound on, you know, your experience, and like, cause you got the whole rundown and I just showed up and fucking got thrown to the wolves. But after 5 minutes with the triple 77 screen set up, I was like, holy fuck. Like, how do you guys ever get out of these? Like, yeah, I would, if I own one, like I would lose my job. I would lose my family. Like, it's exhausting, but it's so realistic, so much fun, and so eye-opening, and like, you know, you just want to improve and do better and like learn, and I could spend hours on that thing. Like I was blown away, and I came into that super anxious and like with no ego, but just like, I'm gonna suck at this, and it's only, I'm like, I'm gonna last like 5 minutes and I'm gonna fucking just throw the controller across the room and I'm not gonna want to do this because I know I suck. But like within just a few minutes, like you can sense improvement and like familiarity and getting accustomed to the environment, the controls, the feedback. Like, it's a lot of work, but it's rewarding once you start to figure it out.
Yep. 100%. Rewarding is a good way to put it. To compare it to, when I had my, you know, much smaller, much cheaper sim set up here in my house, that I bought like right before COVID or during COVID or whatever, and is no longer here. And the reason is because you're like, I would never get out of this. But like at the end of the day, it's work. Right. And then like come home, wife, kid, dogs, all this shit. The last thing I want to do is jump into that because it's putting in work. It's like going to the gym, but in a much more fun, exciting way. This one was so good. Were I a single man, I would still have a sim, just because you could find the time much more easier. But like, as you're saying, it's so immersive, so good, so fun. The tracks are real. Because we stuck to iRacing for the purposes of our... They also had like a set of Corsa you could do, which is visually actually even more beautiful than iRacing. I think iRacing's physics are better, I think, is typically the standard most people consider. But Assetto visually is even more impressive than what we were looking at. The crazy part too is I discovered the guy who owns CXC, Chris, who has taken us through it all, he's also a Lemons racer. And I've raced against them on track. They have a famous team. They have a car called the Chotis, which is a Lotus Elite with a Chevy V8. It's one of the coolest cars out there. Yep. It was there. We went out back and looked at it. And as I'm sitting in the chair, I noticed the two lower belts had this bungee strap on. I'm like, what's that for? Like, was that part of the pre-tension system? Or he's like, no, that's part of our Lemons training.
Oh, I didn't hear that part. I didn't realize they had that in the race car. That's what? Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So he said, it's what they do in endurance race cars. So like, as you're coming into the pits, typically you're undoing your belts because you want to do faster changes. We don't, because our team doesn't need to be quick with our changes because it doesn't matter for us. But they're competing for, you know, victory in class. So the bungees, as soon as you unleash the lock to unlock the harness, it pulls those side belts to the side.
It snaps them to the side. I'm like, it's not.
Yeah. So I was like, that's so cool. He's like, yeah, but wait. The shoulder harnesses in our race car, not in the sim, but in their race car, they put rare earth magnets in the ceiling so that when they undo the shoulder belts, they literally throw them straight up and the magnets are so strong, it grabs the shoulder belts. Sick. So now the lower belts and the shoulder belts are out of the way for the next driver automatically. And that is one of the coolest things I've ever heard.
And I didn't even realize that.
We're sitting there driving.
I didn't realize you were talking about the race car. I thought you were talking about like a sim option package.
No, this is their thing they put in for when they're practicing for lemons races. So they're practicing for lemons races in a $110,000 simulator. and we're driving this $110,000 simulator. And I'm the part that blows me away the most is their harness strategy for shitbox racing. It was one of the greatest parts. It was
About over-engineered. That's 100% the case.
It was so cool. They're building a rig because we can talk about it because they already built one. They're taking basically a short course truck. So just a little shell tube chassis truck. And they're building one for Norwegian Cruise Lines, which they've already done. So I think we could say they're building another one. But it's the full truck. They build the sim into the truck and turn the whole thing into motion. And then because, you know, short course trucks don't have front windshields, they put a fan under the cowl of the hood that blows air in your face matched to engine speed. Oh, the things they think of. He's telling me they also do stuff for the Department of Defense where they have custom built simulator software for high speed training for drivers. And I was like, oh, does it have to be visually good or is the physics more important? He's like, well, the physics are obviously extremely important because we'll be doing pit maneuvers and stuff. But the visuals are way more important than you would think because it's like becomes muscle memory for these guys. And so that was it. He's like, and then he's like, we do other stuff for the Department of Defense that I can't talk about. Yeah. I was like, that's awesome. That's so cool. What a cool business they were in. And the crazy thing too, before I went there, I thought CXC Simulations was like almost like a membership type place where like all the local pro drivers in LA and then some rich guys like, I'm coming in Tuesday to do some laps with my instructors. Like
they own their own shit.
It's a factory.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a factory. And then the sims that are there are like in the showroom, but it's not like you can like show up and be like, all right, I'm driving today. Like we were lucky just to be able to get to go do that.
Talk about your VR experience because the IR experiences were totally disparate, but you crushed.
So at first I wanted to try non-VR because those 777s are fucking the 777s. The 777s are insane. Like that's bigger than the TV in my living room because my wife refuses to get a bigger TV even though we have plenty of wall space. 777s in a tri-monitor setup is bananas. It was unbelievable, perfectly encompasses your vision, and it's really cool. However, when you slide into VR, shit changes because now you can look over your shoulders to
you can see the whole cockpit of the
other
car in real time.
Yes.
Like
you can just look up and look at the sky. Yeah. I mean, you can look down at your feet. You can peer closer to the gauges if you lean in. VR, I had VR briefly when I had my sim and I used it twice because the first time I used it, I got nauseous. And then after that, I was fine, but I had a really nice 49-inch wraparound, which was perfect for my little in my garage setup. And it was really fun, even without all the motion that thing did. But the VR, I started out easy in a MX5. Yeah. In VR, I did
and MX5 is not a Miata?
Oh, I didn't hear you say Miata. I'm sorry. Like cut out when you said it. I'm sorry.
No.
Yes.
MX5.
In the global.
I was like, okay. We're
MX5. You called me on it.
I didn't know.
The global MX5 cup car, the ND. Yes. I drove that at Laguna or WeatherTech Raceway. So drove that and it was great. It was fun. It's a Miata around Laguna. It's Laguna is an iconic track, and it's actually, once you do it a few laps, you're like, okay, I get it.
Right.
The corkscrew is not the hard corner. You know, everybody said that a million times. It's like, you look at the corner after, blah, blah, blah. There's one or two that are tricky as well besides that. So then after that, I jumped to the Radical. Yeah. And it was crazy because now you're in VR sitting on the right side of the car. You're lower to the ground. Speeds are so much faster. And talking to the two guys who were there, who are both Lemon's teammates, it's very much an aero car. So I did a few laps and I just pushed harder and harder through the corners. And through that system, you can like feel that the grip is there. I don't know how to describe it because it shouldn't make sense, but whatever the physics or the math of their sim movement system is, like, I could just feel that I could run that car out to the corner, go faster through the next corner. And that Radical was fucking incredible. And those guys have driven it in real life to test it, because they built one of their sims into a Radical, a real, for a customer. So when they took delivery of it, they were at VIR and they're like, well, we got to do a few laps, you know, to see how the Radical handles. And they said they were blown away. So like, that car just pushes into the ground. That car was fucking sick.
I have video of you lapping Laguna in the Radical, and like, I don't know, you probably did 5 to 10 laps, and like, you were fucking nailing it from my perspective. But like, what was crazy was the display 77-inch monitor. Like, what you were seeing, we saw on one single 77.
Yeah, they cut it to
one. So it's like, we don't have your full field of vision, obviously. But like, your body movement within the rig was translated to that 77-inch monitor. So it was like, it was hard to watch.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, because you're bouncing around in the seat and it's, you know, we're seeing what you see in the headset, but you're moving with the headset. We're just seeing the headset's perspective, right? So it's like, it was super shaky and it was like, it was really hard to watch, but still, like, I'll send you the video, but you were fucking crushing it. Like, you could tell your confidence was like building every lap because of the aero.
Yeah.
And it was like, fuck, like, this dude could actually go out and fucking lap this car like this. Like, you got the line down. I was super impressed with you through the corkscrew, because you say it wasn't the most difficult corner. For me, it was like braking for that corner. Braking was the hardest part for me because I don't know, like, braking is always the most impressive and surprising thing of any motorsport for me.
100%. I'm 100%. So like, no, I'm with you.
I'm used to driving on the street. Obviously, I've done track days. I've been on road courses, but like, I've always been in a street car that doesn't have, you know, any sort of actual roll protection, you know, no real like racing brake system, no harnesses for the most part. And like, you know, it's like, I'm easy on brakes. Like, you know, I don't take any chances. And I know every time I've done a ride along with like a pro driver, it's always been like, hey, man, stop. You got to stop. And like, you know, they stop like 5 seconds later than I would ever imagine. And it's just fucking hammering the brakes and fucking the car, you know, comes down to whatever speed they want. And then they initiate turning. Right. And like, that's the hardest thing for me to translate from my style of driving to a sim or to like any sort of motorsport. Because I'm like, there's no fucking way. Like, there's no fucking way we're going to stop from here. And, you know, once
the corkscrew is a great corner to prove that point, because you're going uphill, which is actually completely in your favor. And then, but as soon as you reach a certain point, you can start to see brake markers. But in the Radical, those brake markers are early for that car. And so, like, and the other crazy thing about the sim, it uses actual Tilton pedals, which are some of the best real pedals you can buy.
Yes.
Hydraulic brakes. I took a picture of Ron when he was driving it, because I didn't realize I heard them say hydraulic brakes and I didn't think about
the
it.
Masters,
you appear at the brakes right there. It's fluid. Yep. Unbelievable. And you can still adjust like brake bias and all that shit. And there were a couple times entering one or two corners where I locked it up, but a quick release, and then you just go through the corner. Yeah, dude. Yeah. So cool. You put that Radical on the roof.
I was going to say,
which is amazing to watch.
Learning curves were so disparate, because
I mean, I've done it. I had a sim for a bit. I probably have more track time than you. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. But like, I'll say, like, yeah. I was impressed with myself and like my learning curve with the screen setup with the 777s. Like,
oh yeah,
I got the hang of that pretty quickly. I feel like, you know, I'm not saying like I was beating any fucking records or anything, but it was just like,
no, you started right, whipping like, that truck. You
know, that was something that was familiar to me is oversteer and like sliding through a corner and like, you know, initiating and like,
yeah.
You know, there's no handbrake, but it was just like, all right, that's my corner. Like once I, like after a couple laps and I figured out, you know, the brake bias and like the application of throttle, like the hardest part for me was being in the right gear and just remembering, like I was watching you and you were using the clutch pedal with like paddle shifters. And that was,
Depending on the car,
unnatural to me, and I started out doing that.
That's because specifically that was more of the setup of that sim.
Right.
It wasn't set up with this with right.
But
H
then
pattern.
Chris. But then Chris.
So the car exactly. didn't know that. So one of the cars I drove was the Mustang FR500 or FR5000S, and that car has an H pattern in real life, and it shifted better
right.
if you used.
So
clutch.
That's what. Yeah. Fucked me up. Like that's what threw me off is I'm trying to clutch. Like I thought it was necessary. And then Chris is like, yo, you don't have to touch the pedal. Like you can just fucking use the paddle.
Especially in the radical.
Like, oh, all right. That makes things easier. But
actually the truck too.
But then I mean I'm just making excuses here, but like, you know, but,
that means you're a real racer now.
It was like I didn't wear the right shoes. I wore fucking Vans that were untied.
Oh, see, now you're talking. I love Vans for driving. Actually, sometimes the heel hurts.
I just needed a narrower shoe because, like, because now I'm ignoring the clutch. Like, I was hitting the clutch when I was hitting the brake. I was hitting the gas when I was hitting the brake. You know, I had to get accustomed to the pedal layout because. I don't have wide feet, but I had wide shoes on and I was catching the other pedals because of the pedal placement. So
yeah,
it was definitely an adjustment, but I feel like I was starting to get the hang of it. And like, you know, I had to kind of tell myself like, stop overthinking this, like resort to muscle memory. Like, you know, I know what it takes to get a car sideways and to modulate and to get it through a corner. Right. And like, once I relied on my own muscle memory, as opposed to what I was seeing and like, you know, what I was necessarily feeling and just like trusted myself. Like I know how to get this thing sideways, power out of the corner, when to shift. Like once I started kind of trusting my instincts, that's when I feel like it became not just more fun, but more gratifying. And like, I started to improve and like, that's all you can hope for from any sort of simulator is like to basically boost your confidence and like improve your skill set. And I was totally like, I went into it with mad anxiety. I was like, I don't want to do this in front of anybody. Like, I don't want anybody watching me while I do this. But like, I drove the FR500 too. And like, it was squirrely. I drove it at Sonoma like you did. And like, I've never had like a driver's perspective on that course. I've never been there. So like, I know the course from watching the NASCAR race. That's it. And, you know, it took me a while to get accustomed to that, but like, I was starting to feel that. And then I switched to the Pro 2 truck and that shit was just like, bop, 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 bop. Like fucking like, you know, like I said, it was somewhat familiar to me, even though I've never driven on dirt like that. I was just like, I know how to like set myself up for these corners. Right. And like, once you kind of get into a flow and like you're enjoying yourself and you're not so like in your head, then it's like, it's really gratifying. And like you improve like rapidly. The VR setup made me sick, like almost instantly. Like I have a super strong stomach. I don't ever get car sick. I don't ever get seasick.
Right.
But I think my issue was like, they're just like, oh, you can't really adjust focus. You can just adjust the headset up and down to like find your point of clarity. And these are readers. I don't have a prescription. So these are readers, but they're like 2.25. And like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, the last time I had my eyes checked, I still had 20/20 vision in one eye, 20/30 in the other, but I'm just nearsighted or farsighted, whichever one it is that like I can't focus on anything within like arm's length, right? So like I can't read a book without glasses. I can't read anything on my phone without. I think you're right. That's why I'm not sure because I feel like it's the opposite of what I think it should be.
I think. Right.
But yeah, anyway, once I put the VR headset on, like everything was blurry. I couldn't really find any single point of focus. And like, if there was just one single point of focus, I think I might've been all right. But like, I got out, I drove the Radical, and like, you know, in your wake, it was just like, I don't want to drive this. Like, this motherfucker just killed it. I was just like, I don't,
can we I? We also just had, a single homie and a double homie, whatever the hell those burgers were called.
Fucking filling burgers. Like, and like getting bounced around the seat was not the most enjoyable thing. But all of that aside, like I would have been fine if I could have found like a point of focus.
If you could have spent like 5 minutes really like dialing in the like headrest.
Maybe like whatever. I don't think my glasses would fit under there. But not Chris, but the other guy.
I bet if you adjusted it, like, I feel like if you took the time, you wouldn't even need the glasses. Like, you know, I feel like if you're like, all right, hey, I just need 2 minutes.
If I had known we were going to do VR, what I think I would have done to prepare myself and my eyes is just not wear my glasses throughout the day. Because my problem is that I wear these readers. Like if I work from home, for example, like I'm in front of screens all day. So I have these on all day long. And then when I go outside, it's like, oh, fuck. Like, you know, if I get in the car, I'm like, ugh. Like, I don't like to drive with my with my readers on. But sometimes if I've worn my glasses all day long, my eyes just will not adjust to the outside world. And, you know, I feel like my eyesight has definitely deteriorated, you know, not just because of age, but because of wearing readers like all the time when I really shouldn't be. So, yeah, I also got super nauseous the second that I got the VR goggles on, and I couldn't make a corner. I couldn't, you know, I switched from the Radical to a Miata spec racer, and I couldn't get through turn one. Like I just like,
did you put that on the roof too? Like,
the Radical, like, I don't even think I made a lap in it. That thing was flipped, but, the Miata, like I,
that car is insane.
There was no sense of speed. It was just like, I'm looking at the gauges and it says I'm going 70 something miles an hour, but it feels like I'm going 20 and I should be able to make any turn. Like I don't need to brake. I can just turn and it's like, nope. Like the second I initiated to turn without brake, just off the course and like straight into the barriers. And like, it's super realistic as far as vehicle dynamics. And it's like, it's unforgiving. And I appreciate that, but it's also, at least with the VR glasses, it was disorienting. It was so hard for me to acclimate to my surroundings. And like you said, in the Radical, you sit so low, like you can't see below like here, right? It's like you're almost like sneaking a peek out of the vehicle. And I can never get acclimated. It took me maybe in there 10 minutes. And also, I was like, dude, get me out of here. Like I can't.
Yeah. It's fun too. And like, so imagine too, like the Radical is insane, but imagine if you hopped into an F1 car. You know, there's rally cross cars are actually very difficult to drive.
But like just that the difference in seating position is so dramatic. Like being in that Radical, being so low and like having to peer over the fenders, like it's not like a video game. It's very realistic and it's very, you know, I don't want to say off-putting, but it's like, oh, wow, these are the adjustments you have to make to your surroundings and to your visibility, like your line of sight. Like you can't, it's not like going from one streetcar to another. It's like, oh, fuck, like, no, I'm way down here. No. And like my horizon line has changed dramatically and my visibility is compromised in these areas so much. And like it's a real adjustment. It's a very real experience. I was thrilled to have been a part of that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, of course. It was fun. And they were so nice. You know, they say, you know, come back anytime. And I'm going to take them up on that because I really want to go back and do the flight simulator.
Do you have any flight experience whim for you?
That's more of a, I don't know. I'd always wanted to try like a good, like, obviously it's not like a, you know, airline grade flight simulator, but it seems like the quality of it would be pretty good based on what they offer. And then I would also really like to see what a Seto looks like, because a Seto has like drift modes and like visually it's beautiful and shit like that. So I don't know. I just would like to, it'd be more fun if we got there at like 11 bought them lunch and like stayed till two, you know.
Like, it's taxing, bro. Like, just, like you're not gonna, I'm not gonna do 4 or 5 hours in a simulator. Like that shit, I'm not in that kind of shape. Like I was sweating.
No, it'd be,
I was sweating it, but 5 minutes fun. Into it, and like I'm not sore or like tired from the experience, but it's like it's taxing. No, no, no. There's a lot of steering feedback. Like you really have to work. Like it's not fucking pressing buttons on a controller. Like you're physically fighting this vehicle, and it's real haptic feedback that you can't ignore or turn off. Like you've got to make the thing do the things, and just like in real life. It is.
It's awesome. I loved it. Shout out to CXC Simulators for letting us check your place out. You guys rule. That was awesome. I'm going to ask you now, I'm assuming, cause I haven't heard anything, that there's no updates.
Nope. On the side of things. I committed to selling the S7 last week, as we know, for my,
I saw that. Well, I saw you post that.
I mean, I announced it in the podcast, but, and announced what I want as well, which I probably should not have done, but, I don't feel like my friends don't even listen to this podcast or they don't even comment. Like I just don't want to drive up prices on shit that I'm seeking. But
No, I thought you meant shitting on you for announcing a price of the S7. Like because when you announced the price of the Tahoe, I was like, what? And then you're like, no, I sold it.
But
good.
I expect kind of the same with the S7. Sorry for slashing back. But I expect the same. Like I just made a story post and I said 60K or close to it. I mean, there's a bunch of S7s, like 16, 17, 18, basically the same car, the facelift S7, C7.5.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of them for sale for anywhere from 45 to 65, depending on mileage, depending on options. But there's not like, this is the thing that's hard to convey with my car is that there's only 49 others that were built with that spec package. And that was the only way you get the two-tone red and black interior. So it's a really special car. It's got every single option, including Bang & Olufsen, soft closed doors, radar cruise control, lane departure avoidance. Like it's got every fucking option. So it's like, I went and checked with CarMax and AutoNation today to see what they would each offer me for the car. And yeah, the offers were embarrassingly 35. Low, but it was just like, you can't specify like this is an Audi exclusive interior. Like, it's just like, what color is the interior? Are there any rips or tears? Yeah. Like, it's just like basic questions. Right. So it's like, I don't know if there's really an Audi S7 enthusiast out there besides myself, but like if there were, like this is the car that you want because it's the most limited, it's the most highly optioned, and it's a sick color combination. Like, you know, the car's tuned, it's got an intake, it's got wheels, exhaust. You know, like I said 60K or close to it, and I stand by that, and I'm not in any hurry to sell. I just don't want to own this car after the 34,000
miles are on it. This could either be an awesome idea, more likely a terrible idea, but
an auction site.
Like if you could get, I was going to say, if they let you use, cause I know Bring a Trailer, like I guess does the hard sell to not put a reserve on a car, like it's their job to move cars. So they don't want reserves, but if you could get a reserve you were comfortable with, it'd be really interesting to see if people are like, oh, you know, cause that website might be like, oh, it does have that interior. Right. That is interesting. And wow, the tune's nice. And but that's also the website where like those like the boomers would be like, what the fuck are those wheels?
Like it's like, you've got to find somebody whose taste aligns with mine. It's like I designed, developed that wheel specifically for my car. You know, it's the luxury of being in the position that I am. I was like, we made that wheel as a forged wheel option for Jean-Pierre Kramer, JP Performance in Germany for a Beetle. A crazy turbo Beetle, wide body Beetle that he built last year. That's why the wheel is called. Yeah, like it's insane. Like crazy wide body, like almost like IMSA like spec. And like the wheel is called the BTL because it's basically an homage to the Beetle, obviously, but it's really kind of Fuke style. It's like a modernized Fuke style. So it's like it in my opinion, it would work on a Volkswagen, any VAG and Porsche product. Like, I think can pull it off.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I developed right. that wheel for like larger sedans and SUVs. So, you know, like I said, that's the luxury that I get. And I think the wheel looks great, but like, you know, that's totally subjective. And somebody else might be like, no, that fucking wheel is trash. So I have another set of wheels and, you know, they're 20s and they're much more conservative and they're clean, they're forged. So it's like, you know, you take your pick and you pay me, you know, everything that I'm asking. You can have both sets, like whatever, you can interchange how you feel. But like, I don't know, man. It's like I tried to sell this car a few years ago when my ex and I split up, and you know, it was just like, even then, right. I think we were asking like 60K, which is crazy. It's like 3 years later, and we're asking the same price.
That is crazy.
And, like, people wanted to haggle and like fucking had. It had
the mileage, but is even low, back though, then, man.
It had 13,000 miles or some shit. Like, yeah, the car hadn't been Jesus. Fucking broken in.
What's the MSRP on that car? Like 80?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you could like crazy. That's the thing. S7 started in like 70s, 80s, and they like every fucking option, like Bang & Olufsen, $6,000. The adaptive cruise control, $6,000. That doesn't have the, you know, it's like,
is that the B&O where the rise. They might have stopped it by that do. One? They don't rise.
Do yeah, they do.
They do? Oh, cool. They rise. Because they don't do they that rise. Anymore.
Like, that's why, you know, yeah, you
thanks,
know
spinning.
But, yeah, nice, man, nice, so it's nice. Like, you know, it's like, I don't know that there's anybody that appreciates a car for what it is besides me. It's like, that car is DCT, like, you know, tuned, it probably makes close to 600 horsepower, right? But it's got a DCT instead of the 8-speed that's in the RS7. So, mm-hmm. it's... to me, a much more fun driving experience. You have actual launch control that dumps the clutches at 5,000 RPM. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't get that in RS7. Like, there's several unique experiences, you know, that come with that car, but it's like, I got to make a video or fucking write a fucking thesis on what's so unique about it in order to get what I want out of it. And, you know,
that RS7 from the factory, though, the same era fucking as your rips. Car?
Holy so sick. Shit. Yeah. Like, I would, you know.
Oh, my God.
I would love, the only reason I want to sell is because I feel like this is my only chance to get some equity out of a car. And, like, you know, yeah, who knows what the economy is going to do in the next year.
Right? The world like, about to ready for collapse. Nuclear
war. Like, let me enjoy.
How's the time? You don't want to be left holding the bag on an S7 when we're drafted Are to
we,
go fight.
We got
to
be past draft age.
In Europe.
We have to.
Oh, right? Yeah. No, I'm good. Yeah. Well, who knows how bad this war is going to be?
Who knows? I'm colorblind, so I feel like that is the automatic out. Like, I can't camouflage. Everything is camouflage to me. Like, I can't see anything anyway. But, you know, I don't know, man. Like, I'm not desperate to sell the car. Like, I love driving the car. But it would be nice to just switch it up, do something different. Like, every day I'm like, you know, SL would be cool, 8 series would be cool, a fucking newer Mach 1 supercharged, like every day I have a different idea of what I would want to replace it with. But
be cool to get that fucking Mustang
more than anything. But like that and the Lincoln are not dependent on the sale of the S7,
right? That would right be right no of course
buy another daily that, you know, is cool and comfortable. But
right.
I don't know, man.
Right,
what's happening with you? What's up with the Jaguar? Yeah,
this lovely bitch behind me. Might be taking it to a place next week to have someone eyeball it who knows a thing or two about smog law, and I will dive deeper into that based on how much I can and can't say because I don't know yet. So I want to wait till I get clarification. But they're going to be able to look at it and go like, oh. Yeah, you're good. Or like, oh no, you're totally fucked. So that'll be very interesting. I think it could go either way on the car. It's running fine. I haven't driven it in a week and a half, Run 2 weeks down. Because I just had the GV60.
There's which a was 60 and a awesome. 70. What else? 60, 70, 90.
GV60 is the electric one. There's a GV60, GV70, and GV80 on the SUV side. On the sedan side, it's G70, G80, G90. And then there's electric G80 as well. But then there's an electric GV70 coming. But the GV60 is sick because I could drive it without using the key. I forget if I said this on the podcast, but like I can open eyes and I can start it with my finger. Like
how easy is that to program, though? And like how susceptible is it to failure?
It took the guy came in who dropped it off. He's like, all right, I just need a minute. All right, now go outside, where do you scan your eye. All right, hop back in, do your fingerprint. The B pillar. There's a little thing. Yeah, on the B pillar. And then there's like you tap where like you would, you know how when you if you have like keyless entry, lines raised on the door handle. You just kind of touch that. Yeah, and it's like, oh, someone's touching this, doesn't have the key. A circle appears on the B pillar.
That's
it. And you like put your eye up to that and it turns green. Yeah. So then you get in the car, now the car's unlocked, and then when you sit down, you put your finger on this little square that looks like what we used to do, thumbprints on iPads. And then the thing pops up in the dash that says like biometric pass, car can start now.
That's or some
sick. Shit like that. Yeah, it's sick. And then this past week I've had the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe Trailhawk, which is like the best one.
The thing's on some pretty aggressive ATs, expensive. Right? Like I pulled up the CXE, I mean, I was surprised to see those tires. I was just like, there's no way that comes from the factory.
They look aggressive. Yeah, because I mean, the Trailhawk is the one that is a little bit taller, more ground clearance, more aggressive, low range. And then there's like fancier trims, like Summit and Summit Reserve wouldn't have the knobbies. They look aggressive, but if I bought that truck, I'd swap them out because they're actually not that impressive of a tire. But the truck itself is gorgeous. Interior, like that's a really premium, and it should be because it's expensive. How much is it? As fuck. The MSRP is in the 60s. I built one online the other day to see where it would land, and I was at like 71. And there's two trims above it. Yes. The Summit and Summit Reserve are already in the 70s. But I think if you buy one of those, you don't say, like really need other options.
Shit
like,
that optioned up in the, what is it? No, the one you had.
Summit and Summit Reserve.
Trailhawk, yeah. Trailhawk. Most of that shit's included, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Those ones, but if you're going to buy one, like the Trailhawk is like still a great Jeep off-road, so like that's a good one to get.
It was. It was good. I had to peek inside. Like I was dying to see what the interior that looked like because I've heard so many good things about the new Grand Cherokee. I was impressed. Looks nice.
Yeah, it's a really really nice truck. I'm pulling up my phone right now, so we can jump over to questions.
Never mind me while I open string cheese.
All right, that's hilarious because I was going to tell you something off camera that I thought you were actually doing, and I was going to wait, and it was like, I'm like, oh my god, are you really doing that right now?
Yeah, I'm not.
You weren't. I eat weed every now and then. I like to drink Ron drinks, like nothing crazy there. I literally was about to like be blown away. I saw a flash of white, which was apparently string cheese, and I saw your head go down. I'm like, yo, are you really doing nobody this needs on to see camera me right eat now?
String cheese, bro.
Now I get it. You're being very respectful, but I was like,
I only had time for a snack before this.
I'm fucking dying. I saw you do it. I was like, I'm like quiet. I'm like, but if anybody watching, go back and watch my face the first time you see the flash of white on screen, like, you'll
ripping,
be like, oh,
ripping
Jeff
the
noticed
package
something.
Open with my teeth because I can't with my hands. I'm like, that should be the first sign that I don't need string cheeses. If you can't open it with your hands, you don't deserve it.
I'm fucking, I'm about to start crying over here. That shit is so funny.
You ever seen the meme?
Oh my god!
You ever seen the meme where an old black man eat bananas? It's like you just break them into like little pieces and fucking shake them around. Like they're not about to stick the banana in their mouth, so they're just like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So yep.
They can't be seen.
They can't eat
a banana
that way.
Like a banana.
Yep. Right. Ridiculous. All right. First question. Ogrehan 81. Everyone loves old school regular cab short bed trucks, yet no one buys new modern equivalents? That's the question, because it ends on a question mark. You are correct, right, because everybody wants room. My uncle actually has a short cab Ram, and when I saw it, I was like, oh shit, like that's rare to see. Like just the shorty cab, Ram 1500
it's a
pickup.
Shorty bed.
Regular cab.
RCSB. I mean, you're not wrong, but that's just like the accepted nomenclature, right. RCSB. Regular cab, standard bed.
Oh, okay.
Or short bed.
Yes. Yes. Short that's bed. What it is. Yeah. Yes.
I don't know, but you said, standard shorty cab. That's what fuck meant.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I've been drinking wine and you've been snorting string cheese. So he had a question, but you answered your own question. I mean,
assuming he wanted an explanation. I think, I have one. Like I'm a fan of the sport truck. I always have been, like, regular cab, short bed has always been like my favorite body style of any truck. You know, we really haven't had like a high performance sport truck like that since the Lightning. There's been special editions where dealerships or tuners will fucking supercharge, you know, a regular cab short bed F-150 or Silverado or whatever. I think the reason why those hardly exist anymore is because they've gotten so tall, they've gotten so big, the proportions have gotten so out of hand that they look silly in that configuration.
They do look silly.
Like, you know, if you were to lower a current F-150, like basic spec, regular cab short bed, like you need 24s or 26s for it to look right proportionally. Like when you see these trucks on like 17 and 18 inch drag wheels and slicks, there's no tire that's tall enough to fill those wheel wells, even on a lowered truck. So like there's mad gap and they just look silly. So it's like, you know, the proportions lead people, and the fact that pickup trucks have basically replaced like luxury sedans in most manufacturers' product offerings. Yeah, like everybody wants the four door, like the Super Crew, the Crew Cab, whatever their nomenclature is. Yeah, it's like, you know, they've become luxury vehicles. So it's like you want all the room for your rear seat passengers. You want all the creature comforts.
I challenge Ford to make a single cab luxury truck marketed at gay men called the Queen Ranch.
I was with you. I was like, fuck yeah, fuck yeah. Luxuries. Fuck
that would be the most awesome.
Like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, well.
I would just love to see the marketing behind it, how offended all these tough assholes in truck country would be to proud gay cowboys hop out of the Queen Ranch. Fucking, I would
we need to get
celebrate
to,
and cheer
to
that
render
shit.
Render that spec. We take time to
do. We know someone who could draw up a Queen Ranch. We just got to do it in a way that we got to make sure we have it. We run it through our respective.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, hey, I feel like
funny.
That's not the vehicle they're looking for at all. But
no, I mean, there might be like a proud gay Texan who loves trucks, doesn't want a Queen Ranch. I mean, it doesn't need to be called a Queen Ranch, but the Queen Ranch is funnier for the purposes 100%. Of this joke.
Yeah.
Do it, Ford, you cowards.
Yeah. Like,
so you were saying.
Next question.
So Sean Keeley asks, are panoramic glass roofs stupid, heavy, expensive, and makes the interior get hot faster? I like a big panoramic glass roof. However, the problem is that automakers think that instantly equals luxury, whereas like European market versions of the same car, especially if it's, you know, something German, obviously, they don't offer it because those customers don't want it because it's just unnecessary. So like we can't get a Taycan wagon in the U.S. with a steel roof.
Right.
You can't get it. It only comes with a panel roof because that's what the U.S. customer wants. So
I love them.
I like them.
With a shape, with either a full, you know, option to black it out, like, you know, regular roof with, you know, an actual hard I don't want to say hard cover, but you know, an actual solid cover, or at least a sunscreen. Like, it drives me crazy in Teslas that there's not any sort of fucking screen, and there's really, I mean, I know it has like a UV coating, but it's still annoying that you can't black that out, or at least minimize and adjust the opacity and, you know, the amount of UV radiation and sunlight that comes in.
Yep. I think it's the Toyota Venza, which is, you know, a hybrid crossover that has a roof where you can hit a button, I think, and change opacity of the roof. And it's wild. And Porsche has a, you can do that. And it's an option.
I think
on
Mercedes
Porsche's actually too, I think.
Initiated that, like introduced it with the SL like 12 years ago, whatever.
Yeah.
10 years ago. Yeah. It's fucking cool. It's something like it really is like fucking magic, but you know,
it is. Yeah.
It's also expensive like magic.
Yeah. Sean Keeley also asks, are all the modern luxury options making cars too expensive? No, I would argue that it's a combination of trying to hit fuel economy numbers while also stuffing these cars full of required safety equipment. So the cars are insanely heavy. Also on top of that, every single part you could imagine is expensive right now. I don't think it's the options. Like, I don't think like CarPlay is necessarily an expensive thing to add. And I think it's just these cars are filled with like safety sensors and all that shit. And it's all expensive to manufacture. I just don't think it's like, you know, a cooled seat is what's driving up the price.
I don't want to disagree with you for the sake of disagreeing with you, because I think that is a very valid point. But at the same time, especially with luxury car makers, like if a dealership orders a car, they're going to order it with all the options. Like they're not going to order a stripper fucking, you know, E63. Like they're going to option that to the max because they know they'll find a customer. Additionally, like, you know, people, when they go to spec cars, like especially luxury and, you know, sports cars, like they want to fucking tick every box and make it as individual as possible. Also, you know, to his point, like the option packages where you can't, like when you try and spec a car, like it's super frustrating. I was fucking around with like the C8 Corvette configurator last year. Cause I was just like, oh, if I can get a car at sticker, like I can maybe make sense of this for a while. Right. And I thought there was a chance I could get a car at sticker, but anyway, like I start to configure the car and it's just like, okay, I want this interior, you know, color scheme and these materials. And when you'd click on that, it would show as like a $1,800 option, but then it would erase a bunch of other options that you wanted. And it would require you to step up to another options package that added like $6,000. So it's like, you know, it's that way with a lot of manufacturers. It's like, you know, Audi and Black Optics, like Black Optics includes a lot of times like sport exhaust on S models and RS models. And like, you know, it's like, it's not just blacked out window trim. It's a complete options package that eliminates some color combinations and forces you to level up in other options combinations that, you know, really to get what you want, it's not $1,500. It can be like four times the price. And yeah, that obviously drives up the cost because it's like you have to decide what's most important to you. And if you want to spring for the one thing that requires four or five other things.
Sure. I took his question more to be not like, are all the modern luxury options making luxury cars?
But I don't think it's just luxury cars. I think that's just become kind of the norm. It's just like manufacturers are packaging things that aren't necessarily, you know, correlated
and
required of one another. It's just like, you want the sport look? Okay, well, you got to get these dampers, you got to get this diff, you got to get these wheels and these tires. You can't look sporty and not be sporty. It's like, you got to, it's like, what the fuck does the sunroof have to do with Alcantara fucking, you know? Yeah. It's like you can't order a la carte 100%. Anymore. Like everything is packaged with something else.
No. Yeah, you can, except on the Hellcat, the jailbreak, but you're already starting at a Hellcat, so you're fucked. Taco_Bellionaire, which is still one of my favorite names. Do Autopia 2099 tickets include entry to the Peterson? Surprisingly, I've never been. I'm still working to confirm that. So I don't know for sure. I know it's something we've talked about, and I really would love for it to be the case, because $5 to get into both would actually be cheap for the Peterson. So that's why I don't want to give you an answer. I will follow up and post a reply to that ASAP to let you know. Initially the thought was no, but then they were talking, there's that way that we can make that happen. I think we just had to put out more money on our part. So I will let you know. Mein Coffee Clash asks, what's the most memorable bumper sticker you've ever seen? I don't remember a bumper sticker, but I do have a very clear memory of a personalized plate that my wife got a picture of. I mean, years and years and years ago, well before our daughter was born, before we owned a condo, before like, we still lived in Huntington. She took a picture of a plate because she's like, I can't believe this car. It was because in California you can get symbols on plates. So it was I, heart, and then it was MLFCNT.
I'm not going to say it.
What's your first thought?
Yeah.
But I know you. I know your answer. However, there was also a Disney sticker on the car.
Maleficent? Is that how it's pronounced?
So Maleficent. So I think they want it to say, I love Maleficent. However,
if I say it, will you make this?
And if the they title didn't the mean episode? This and they played it, I already changed it to okay. In the simulation as the title Milf of the episode. Gun. But I love what we think this. I can't make that a YouTube title because we'll get
you got me blocked, to say it.
But I heart MLF. CNT.
No, I said it.
They're smart enough. Everybody listening is smart enough. They get it.
So you can.
No, you said it. okay. Yeah. No, I'm not going to edit it out.
Right.
Because there might be somebody who goes, oh. So every now and then, my wife and I will still joke about that plate. Because it was honestly, it might have been 15 years ago. It might have been that long ago. And I still think about that plate every now and then, because that person was like, either they actually really do love Maleficent, yeah. Or totally. They pulled a sneaky past the DMV. And then I saw another one years ago that I think about too, that was there's a hand symbol, and it was hand LMYBIZ. Oh, yeah. I was like, that's fucking dope. Handle my biz. I'm like, that's dope.
There's a few.
Like, it's corny, but it's dope.
I remember seeing this on Jalopnik back in the day. There's a few. Virginia was like always regarded as like the most lenient when it came to vanity plates. No. Well, okay. Maybe Maine. Both, but like Virginia for sure. And like, there were like, there's a bunch of plates that had the hand and like, they either reference like masturbation or something weird with kids. And like people applied for these plates just to prove a point, just to see if they could get them, and they got them. And it was just like, always like, oh, what the fuck? Like, how did we allow that?
Well, the famous one in Virginia, that was an early Jalopnik article, was because the plate,
exactly.
The
I knew that
the plate it had was kids first.
Yes, that's what it was.
And eat the kids first. But then they did a follow-up story years later. Maine was for a long time. I think it's changed just recently. I could be wrong, but Maine doesn't care. Like, you just file it, and they did it. So people were getting stuff through like that said, like, fuck you, and like shit like that on their plates. which you can't
to that
do
point,
here.
The anniversary. I just saw I was reminded on Instagram, like I posted this 2 years ago today, I guess. But I tried to get 777 ho for my Tahoe, right? And it got denied. And then a bunch of people, HOE. Yeah, everybody refers to Tahoes as hoes. Like, you know, it's always been like a play on words, low ho, if you had like a, you know, a body drop Tahoe, whatever. Like, So I don't remember what my explanation was. It's probably honest, like, you know, the name of my business, like all my Instagram social media handles are 777 style. This is a Tahoe, like commonly, you know, nicknamed and referred to as a hoe. So like, it's 777 hoe. Didn't get approved. So a bunch of my friends, like, no, I was not surprised, but a bunch of my friends
were you surprised?
Like, sent me like articles immediately afterwards when I said that it wasn't approved, because I guess California repealed the law that allowed the DMV to basically discriminate on and regulate your plate. Like basically,
oh, really?
It's an infringement of your First Amendment rights for them to say what you can and can't have. So this was probably like within,
wow.
It was definitely within the last 2 years. And it was either a resolution that was passed or a referendum, whatever. Like they basically said, it's a free for all now. Like you can get whatever the fuck you want. But if
what?
The plate that you want has been applied for and rejected before, then it's off the table. So it's like if I had waited 6 months, then I would have been in the clear. Like, I welcome any listener or anybody that knows more about this to chime in and like comment and like let us know what like the current status is. But that I tried again once I heard that and I heard that the resolution had passed or whatever it was. I tried again and was denied. So I was like, motherfucker, like if I'd waited 6 months, I probably would have been good. But
damn,
you know, you live, you learn.
That would even be because even if you bought it, you had it on the truck for a little bit, sold it just to have one of the plates on like
777 STIL on that car or on that truck. And I don't know if I ever told the story about how one license plate got stolen. Some dude fucking broke into my truck while I was parked at work over the weekend, lived in my truck, pissed in a bottle and left that bottle in the truck, fucking left all the fingerprints all over it, organized my receipts and my CDs.
That's a pretty big one.
And then just left. Didn't steal anything, but the front license plate, which I kept inside, like on the dash. He stole that and the registration, and the idiot got pulled over in a stolen car like a month later with my plate and my registration. And I got a call and it was just like, do you know somebody by the name of so-and-so? I was like, absolutely not. And they were like, would you have ever given this person access to your vehicle? You know, did you leave your vehicle unlocked where he may have accessed it? No, absolutely not. He broke into my truck. He stole my license plate. What's up? They're like, yeah, we pulled him over with a stolen vehicle. And I don't know if he had my plate on the vehicle, but they just said that they found my plate. And I never went to go get it or anything. I was just like,
right.
Like, you know, I didn't use the front plate on the front of the vehicle anyway. So I was just like, it's a fucking pain in the dick to go
to
a police department. Well, I have one.
I love hanging my
plates. Yeah, I didn't give, you
know. Oh, okay. Okay. If you have one, then who cares? Yeah.
Personalized plates. I kept that shit. So I have one. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But
okay.
Anyway. Great.
That's good. That's good. That's good. Let me pull this back up. Next question, blah, 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 blah. Taco Bell, you know, we'll get back to you. We did mine coffee lunch. Jay Whitehead, are you racing Filthy 50 this weekend? That's a mountain bike race. No, I didn't even know about the Filthy 50. I'm way too out of shape, and I would have done the 30 or 35, whatever the shorty is. And there's like a kids one. I probably would have been in the kids one. Dissonance Smithing, Jensen Interceptor or Jag XKE? This is actually a much harder question.
No, it's not for me.
Than, well, I don't know if it is for you, but it is for me because I'm going to preface this by saying driving an E-Type was a 100% meet your heroes moment. I got to drive an E-Type for about a day and a half around the perimeter of Lake Tahoe. 64 and it was like a series 1.5 car. So it had a synchroed gearbox, which is important. It had the 4.2, which is important because I guess the 12s are a nightmare. It had, you know, the proper straight six Jag sound, which I think is essentially the same engine as this car. It, you know, would have, like, I think it's the same engine, which is wild. And the guy who owned it was a rock star, former Air Force pilot, who then went to work for Northwestern for 35 years. He used to tow a motorcycle behind it, so it had a hitch on the back. And he just gave us the keys for a day and a half. Well, I drove it for this classic car show that didn't go anywhere with my gorgeous co-host, who wasn't like really a car person. Halfway through the day, or no, on the end of the shoot, we're driving it back, like cruise broken. We're like, all right, we got to go take the car back to so-and-so's house. I'm like,
yeah, what?
And we had the top up the whole time, which is like sacrilege for that car. But like for audio purposes, we had the top up. I'm like, hey, Jael, can we put the top down? She's like, absolutely. Put the top down, you know, running through the gears around Lake Tahoe, sunsetting. And she's like, like, I can see her looking around and she looks at me. She goes, I get it. I'm like, there it is. Car was amazing. Drop it back off the guy. He's like, all right, did you enjoy it? Yep. Thanks. Great. Boom. Leave it in the driveway. I was like, what a fucking boss to just be like, yeah. But the shoot was sponsored by the insurance company that insures his car. So if anything happened, even though that car though, like
harder to replace
for a very long time. Yeah. He had a crazy story that I'll touch on for 2 seconds. He bought one with a friend. They both got shipped off to Korea or Vietnam. Well,
I mean, they didn't buy those cars before
his car though, before Korea. He left.
Korea was in the '50s. Yeah.
Was it? Okay. So Vietnam, they bought one before they got shipped off. The dude whose car I drove, he had one, his E-Type. He got T-boned, car was destroyed. He was fine. They ship off. His buddy gets shot down and dies, but like left him the car, wow. The other Jag. So that's like the Jag I drove.
That's what I said.
So like, it's insured, but it's like, please don't also destroy that car. Yeah, irreplaceable. But he's like, he just literally tosses the keys. He's like, all right, have fun. It's like, what a fucking, oh my God. But all that said,
really?
Jensen Interceptor okay. all the way.
Yeah, totally.
Yep, 100%. I love the looks of it. I mean, it's American V8 power. I know someone who owns one and also owns a Jag and owns a Series Defender. And anytime he posts a picture of that Jensen, it's like, fuck, that is high on my list to own someday. And it might be a temperamental nightmare of the Chrysler engine, but
that was my answer too. I don't know if that's what you anticipated. So yes. But so that's my buddy Chuck that asked that question. I appreciate it. I don't think it was a loaded question at all. Like, I think he, you know, it could have gone either way for both of us. But I only say Interceptor because I have an experience with an Interceptor, not personally, not driving one, like not one in my life. But when I lived in West Hollywood, there was this dude that used to drive a right-hand drive Interceptor, like all on the back streets. Like, you know, it's like when you live in West Hollywood, like you're not fucking cruising Sunset. Like you're avoiding Sunset at all costs. You're avoiding Santa Monica at all costs. Like you're on Franklin, Fountain, like all the other fucking side streets. Like
you're on a street that everybody else knows from outside of California.
Going to and from dinner and, you know, bars or whatever. Like, you know, I always had something crazy from work. I would either be like, you know, I'd have to shake down customer cars and, like, you know, take them home and stuff. So I'd, you know, I had all sorts of shit, C63s, ghosts, fucking CTSVs and like personal cars, like crazy shit. But, there was this dude that had a white right-hand drive Interceptor that I would see all the time. And every single time I'd like come up to a light next to him or opposing him, I'd be, what the fuck is that? Because it just looks so different. It's like wide and it's like bulbous and like it actually had a cool stance. Like that's what like drew me into it. I was just like, what the fuck is that? Like I never figured out. And then he'd roar off from a light and like he wouldn't drive like an asshole, but he'd just like move away like kind of swiftly and it fucking sounded so good. And I was just like, that's an Interceptor. Like, you know, I've read about him, I've seen him in magazines, but like never had any sort of like personal experience with him. But like that car, that dude that I never met, but was just like, you know, like a mainstay in the neighborhood, like on these like back streets of West Hollywood, like that sold me on that car. I was like, that is like some gentlemanly like gangster shit. Hell like yeah. That nobody has that. Nobody else has that.
It is. Yes. Yes. It is such an underappreciated machine. Yeah. Not by you, clearly, not by me, clearly. But you just said it. It's like, it's not in incognito because it looks different. People are like, what is that? Probably harder rear glass to get than the first gen CUDAs, you know? I think most of them come with like 440s under the hood, like, you know, some Mopar. I don't think they had 383s. I think it was 440s, like big Mopar engines. And I love Mopar. Totally. So, I mean, think about what you could do to that engine, what you could do to that car, still keep it, you know, stock looking on the outside. You don't have to go crazy with it because you could just do some fun shit, make amazing noise. And it looks like, you know, a classic gentleman's car. A gentleman's car. Absolutely. Like if the young dude from the Kingsman series had to pick a car,
it'd be Arresto Modded Jensen Interceptor. I imagine like some 70s, like dapper fucking like groovy ass motherfucker. Like,
yeah, yeah. He's like, do right, I know right. how to do a burnout, motherfucker? I invented them. You know, like something like, yeah, 100%. Our friend Type R Kelly, who you should connect with because he has expressed interest in the truck. I'm just going to put that out there. Yes. Have you guys seen how much Jay Leno has been getting hate for having Biden on there? I didn't until I read this comment, and then I went and looked under the YouTube, or I went and looked on Instagram, and oh my God, it's an absolute nightmare. It's to be expected based on the size of Leno's audience, and probably who's like, oh, Jay's one of us. And he had an episode with the president on, and the president's a car guy. So people are like, I can't watch this. Like the way how far we're divided, where you can't watch what used to be my favorite car show, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure they don't even mention, because Jay's like so safe. They probably don't even mention one fucking thing about politics. They probably talk about cars the whole time. And he replied, Type R Kelly followed up. I feel like those are the people that commented on your Jeep video. And yes, it's like the Jeep video where their kids, the people commenting on Leno's video are like their parents. Though I'm old and that video is old. So, yeah, I saw it and it's a shame because he literally just had, he had Obama on too, I think, or no, that was Seinfeld had Obama, but I wouldn't be surprised if like, I wouldn't be surprised and he might not have, I'm not going to say that he did, but I wouldn't be surprised if Jay was like, yeah, let's see if Donald wants to, you know, do a fucking, you know, we'll go in a limo. And Trump's like, no, I'm not going
to
do
that. Way to showcase your impressions.
I'm making excuses. Thank you. Best impression, by the way, if you're looking for a really good Donald Trump impression, Shane Gillis, amazing comedian who got kicked off of SNL before he even got on SNL, has an amazing special where he does the funniest Trump segment I've ever seen. And if anybody wants it to know more specifically, hit me up and I will email you the link because it is fucking amazing. That dude is hilarious. But yeah, it's a shame that, yeah, but it's, I mean, not on,
you
I mean,
have,
in this day and age.
You have any political figure on, like, you got to expect a certain amount of backlash from either side. Like our politics have just become passion, not anything based. Yeah, based in rationale, based in actual politics. It's just, it's all a cult of personality now. And like, I wouldn't watch a Biden episode before any sooner than I'd watch a Trump episode of any sort of car show. Like, it just, you know, it's going to be polarizing. And like, I'm not a fan of either. So, you know, I'm not going to watch it. So I will not have a reaction to it. But, that's what you expect. Like, you cannot fucking engage with any sort of political figure without expecting backlash. Like, it just is what it is. But like, you know, it's just sad that you cannot.
Yeah. I mean, they put him on. They had to know.
You can't pretend to be
just unbiased. Have him on, like, as a car guy.
You know, just having him on is a statement that you're in support to his political opponents, and it's fucking outrageous. Like, you know, have a platform where everybody's invited, and whoever shows up, and that shouldn't be a judgment on the guest or the production or, you know, the producers or anybody else involved. But that's, you know, that's a day that has passed. We are far beyond that in today's political climate. So.
Yeah.
I think it's unfortunate, but it's not unexpected.
Right. Like, not at all. No. I agree with you. On that note, this is a longer one for us, which is pretty good. Hopefully everybody's ear holes are lapping it up. Hopefully you're enjoying it. The Hooniverse podcast t-shirt is almost up. Deck? I think we're entering the final stretch. If you haven't gotten it, try to get one soon. Yeah. The Alpine Chiclets. Jump on one. If you want to get one, do it now. Check your picture. I actually have to buy them if I want one. So I got a picture. I bought one.
Nice.
I buy that. And then like just a few bucks goes back to me. I don't get a discount code and I buy one for Sloan and I buy one for my wife. And I'm like, hey, here's your t-shirts.
Kitchen counters with them.
I paid for
months later.
Yeah. No, Sloan, they wear them. Jen wears them to like bed. Sloan wears them around every now and then. I think they appreciate that. I think they appreciate
I don't.
I'm not upset either. I'm not upset either way. I actually enjoy seeing them wear them, though. I'm not going to lie. So, grab one if you can. Otherwise, we will chat with you.
We don't want to hear from you.
People. Well, we won't. You'll hear us.
No comments. I'm kidding. Yeah. Questions.
No, we do. No comments, but questions. We want the questions. Comments? The questions? Yeah, we're good with those. We'll see y'all next week. Bye. I gotta wait. Hang I gotta up. Pause because I always cut you off. Do you have any outgoing message?
We're done, right?